Chapter 11, Finally Waking Up. "Do you want some dinner?" asked Buck, gently shaking Dodd.
I think so," he responded, opening his eyes and giving a big sigh. "Are you headed down soon?"
"It's long over, but I brought some back for you. A pile of roasted ham, 2 freshly baked rolls, cooked peas and carrots, and cream cake. I figured you'd be hungry after sleeping all day, and without eating breakfast. Though this morning's meal wasn't exactly worth staying awake for. A lot of people got sick in a hurry. Some did, some didn't. Today was quite a day."
Dodd dove into his food the moment Buck handed it over. It was heavenly. Having skipped breakfast and lunch made every bite taste like Christmas dinner at Aunt Hilda's.
"I see you've revived," called Boot from down the hall. He was banging around, bouncing a leather ball back and forth on the wall.
"That's it, guys," he said to the boys that were with him. "I won again."
The young boys begged for a rematch, claiming he had cheated somehow. Nevertheless, typical of Boot, he left while he was on top.
"Is Dilly all right?" asked Dodd as Boot strolled into the bedroom, his thumb tucked under the checkered vest that stretched tight across his chest. Boot closed the door firmly behind him, did a clever spin, and plopped himself regally on his bed. A pleased look spread across his face. To read it, you'd think he had just finished the Boston Marathon in first place.
"I'm sure she's fine," he said, gloating over something he was flauntingly keeping a secret. "And don't worry about having been missed today either. I took care of that for you. Enough other people were disrupted that nobody would have been able to tell you were sleeping off last night's escapades." Boot resituated to an upright position and added, "Anyway, what happened with your tracking?"
Before Dodd could respond, Buck jumped in and pointed a finger of condemnation at Boot, saying, "It was you! I knew it!"
"What are you talking about?" said Boot, grinning. Buck groaned with disgust. "You made people sick at breakfast."
"No," gasped Boot, acting horrified.
"And set the herd of cows loose in the front courtyard, too."
Boot shrugged.
"And I know you're the one that hid Ascertainee's key after locking all the library doors. The library's never been locked in all the years I've been here. They want people in, not out."
Boot tapped his foot against the floor, nearly ready to burst from concealing his story. However, he didn't bend under pressure.
"Do you really think I would do all of that?" Boot finally asked. His eyes twinkled with glee.
"Yes," said Buck, flopping down next to Dodd, "especially since half of Rawl's Cousings were trapped for hours, missed lunch and had to spend the afternoon reading in the library, and without Sob's help. He spent his time wandering around with Taney, like a leashed pet. She was sure he'd done it to teach them a lesson for choosing to skim books instead of wagging after him when the cows came calling."
"Thank you, Buck," said Boot, smirking. "You're too kind, giving me the credit, but I'll never admit it."
"You already did, said you'd taken care of everything for Dodd," grumbled Buck, knitting his brows. He was more irritated than mad.
"Oh," sighed Boot, beaming as one who had been caught the unnamed hero. "What I meant is, Dodd and Dilly are lucky to have been able to sleep on a day that was busy enough for them to go unnoticed."
Buck shook his head silently. He was ready to give up when someone knocked at the door.
"Come on in," said Boot cordially, jumping to get it. He was flying high on the adrenaline of an exciting day.
"Thank you. Is Dodd in here?"
It was Bamboo. He walked past Boot and into the room where he found Dodd sitting on his bed.
"Sorry I didn't connect with you earlier," said Bamboo. "I meant to meet up this afternoon when I first returned from Highgate, but it seems we've had a terribly busy string of misfortunes." Bamboo's eyes drifted to Boot, who was now looking less pleased and more guilt-riddled.
"Perhaps we could talk," said Bamboo to Dodd, approaching him gingerly, "unless you've made up your mind to go to sleep." Dodd hid his half-eaten dinner behind his back and smiled. He had snoozed all day in his clothes, because he didn't have any pajamas or any other changes of attire, so he was more than ready to fish for answers.
"I'm awake and dressed," he said heartily, popping out of bed. "Now would be a great time. Do you suppose we could talk in Pap's room? I haven't gotten a chance to see it yet."
Bamboo smiled with a knowing look. Dodd held up the 3 keys he had been given. He had them attached to a chain around his neck.
"Well, of course," declared Bamboo in a pleasant voice. "I was thinking that would be a great idea. It would be fitting for me to show you some of, Pap's things." He pointed the way with his cane, but before he left the bedroom, he examined Boot with his eyes and added, "Please, son, try to be good tomorrow."
Boot apologized and slunk into the corner, while Buck beamed in glory, having correctly detected his brother's devious activities. Dodd almost explained what had happened. He really, really wanted to, especially with Boot getting in trouble for helping him. Nevertheless, he knew it wouldn't be wise. Bamboo could be trusted with the world, but if he had knowledge of their investigation, he would likely bring it to a sudden end out of concern for their safety. It didn't take long to get to Pap's room, which surprised Dodd. The castle was large enough that he assumed it would take forever at Bamboo's snailish pace. Instead, right across the way from Greenhall's entrance, there was a single door that led to a mini conference room. In the front, on the left side of a wooden stage, there was another door hidden behind a dark maroon velvet curtain. It was made of solid iron and firmly locked. "Could you use your key, Dodd?" asked Bamboo. Dodd was puzzled. "Is this it?" he blurted without thinking. "I mean, I thought only windowless meeting rooms and storage chambers were over here. Why was he living in a closet?" Bamboo laughed when he heard it. "Just open the door and I'll show you," he said. The big key fit perfectly, and on the other side was a small square room, about 15 feet across. The ceiling, however, was higher than the candle's light could reach. Ropes hung down the sides of the stone walls in a number of spots. "This is a strange place to live," said Dodd, surveying the clutter. He was mortified to think that Pap had spent his time there, among the ropes and dirty crates and chests. He was disappointed, to say the least, despite the array of fascinating gadgets and tools that spilled out of various containers. Bamboo grinned, knowing Dodd hadn't figured out where they were headed. He pointed at a thick cord that trailed upward into the darkness and said, "Come on, Dodd, give that a tug and you'll see where Pap really lived." Dodd was instantly relieved and hoped Bamboo hadn't noticed the frustration on his face. He yanked excitedly, waiting for the wall to open up or a trap door in the floor to click ajar. Anything could happen, he thought. It was brilliant. As Dodd pulled, he wondered whether it was Pap's idea or Bamboo's to have the real entrance hidden in a closet. The rope hissed and whizzed like the calling of stage curtains before a play. He knew it was doing something, though he didn't know what. "Good thing Pap improved this place, geared it 20-1, or we'd be here all night," said Bamboo, his eyes glistening with memories of Pap. "Your grandfather loved inventions. This one is a favorite of mine." A wooden box, framed neatly with oak planks and brass pegs, eventually lowered in front of Dodd and Bamboo. It was large enough to sit four people on little benches that lined the inner sides, with a hinged seat in front of the door. "Climb in," said Bamboo, his voice drenched with anticipation. "Since giving up on riding flutters, this is as close to flying as I get these days. You'll want to hold on tight, son." Bamboo entered the box, clasping a short rope that attached to a lever on the wall. After shutting the door and making sure Dodd was secure, Bamboo pulled the rope and let go. It released the lever and away the two flew. Up, 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 at least 25 stories up. It wasn't anything like an elevator. Short of a roller coaster ride at Disneyland or Six Flags, it had few comparables. The air blew Dodd's hair violently around, and the surge was strong enough to completely rearrange Dodd's innards, making breathing nearly impossible. He almost lost the dinner Buck had so kindly brought to him, especially when the box bounced up and down at the end, settling into position. Bamboo's candle didn't help the ambience either. It would have blown out if it hadn't been resilient, like a flare. Instead, it hissed and sputtered, flickering as a strobe light. When the ride finally stopped, Dodd paused, panting, waiting for his head to come back to him. The world swirled around. Bamboo, on the other hand, seemed unaffected, other than to display great pleasure in having flown. "We get out on this side," he said cheerfully, pointing nonchalantly to a hallway that led to another door. "If you try the opposite, you'll find the step is quite large." He chuckled at his joke until his cheeks pinked, though they were already on their way from the thrill of the ride. Dodd peeked over the edge as he staggered to his feet. It was a complete free fall to the bottom. Bamboo led the way, and Dodd followed, using his key when they arrived at the door in order to get into Pap's room. It was much nicer than Dodd had expected. It was a house full of rooms. Cabinets and cupboards were everywhere, containing all sorts of gadgets and things Dodd had never seen before. He understood why Boot desperately wanted to accompany him. It was like entering a shop of wonders, and they were all Dodd's. Or at least the note had said they were. "It's no surprise to me that Boot likes this place," said Dodd excitedly. "Boot hasn't seen this one," insisted Bamboo, shaking his head. "He's only seen Pap's decoy on the main level, just down from the kitchen. Uses the same big key. Pap said it was convenient to nap in and for storing a few outfits, but I know why he kept it. In case someone felt the urge to root through his stuff, they could take those things and leave satisfied without getting anything truly important. I'm one of the few people who still know about this spot." Bamboo paused to think. his eyes varnished with memories of the past. It took a minute before he returned to the conversation. The shaft was a quick rappel from the roof long ago, back when we, did a few things up here. Anyway, it's a lot different now. Pap and I rearranged it about 6 years ago, for Pap's safety. He has enough food and beverage in his kitchen right over there to last for months, just in case. Dodd looked over and noticed a large room with vaulted ceilings and a wall of windows where Bamboo's hand had indicated was the kitchen. Your grandfather liked technology and told me I'd be surprised if I knew what I was missing here in Green, but I always reminded him that I had heard plenty from my parents who spent time with the Maj. Not to mention, much of what you'll find in here originally came from them, bit by bit. It's quite a collection. You won't see one better anywhere else. So you let Pap use your stuff, said Dodd hesitantly, assuming the things in the decoy room were what Bamboo had planned on giving to Dodd, not the museum of supplies he was now looking at. Yes, stammered Bamboo. Well, sort of. He disappeared once more into deep thought, furrowed his brow, and shook his head. It was like he was having great difficulty in finding the right words or discerning what he dared share. In any event, he finally said, unabashedly, it's all rightfully yours now, Dodd. This whole place and everything in it, I'm just glad you've chosen to come here and use it. Bamboo sat down and made himself comfortable in an easy chair that resembled a recliner Pap had enjoyed in the duplex. It had been his favorite place to sit. Dodd stared, mostly in shock that Bamboo had just said the place was his. It was substantially larger than both sides of the duplex at home, possibly double or more, and it was elegant and brimming with expensive-looking things. Pap had this chair custom-made, said Bamboo, breaking into Dodd's trance-like stupor. I fell in love with it enough to have a replica fashioned for me, too. Sits in my bedroom. I sure love your family. Your grandpa was incredible. We had many good times together. He fought with the strength of a lion and still lived as gently as a man. Dodd took a seat close to Bamboo to listen well, though his eyes busily drifted around the unusual surroundings. He couldn't help himself. It was like Christmas morning, only a much grander pile of presents. A mansion filled with presents. There were so many things to investigate, and the light from two lit stacks in the entry room made it possible to glimpse parts of three more rooms and a short distance down a wide hall. You're not being aided by a swapper, said Bamboo frankly. It was all Dodd needed to hear in order to refocus his full attention on the conversation. I was there when your grandfather first came to Green, Bamboo continued, his honest eyes revealing he had a wealth of hidden knowledge. Dodd was shocked. His heart pounded loudly in his chest and his eyes grew intense. It was the first time anyone had addressed his strange circumstance as though there was a logical explanation. It was in a cottage down by the seashore, in a city called Dossop. Papali Honogoso was a longtime friend of mine. He had been aided by a swapper, though under strange conditions the mentor had been released prematurely, and amazingly, my friend still clung to life. I went to visit him in his home, brought Higa to see if there was anything left to try. Dodd was all ears. This was the discussion he had been waiting for. Higa assessed him and indicated that it was far too late to do anything, said Bamboo somberly. Papali Honogosa was already a casualty of the wars with Dredarius's father, Dred Lucius. Higa left to see another friend in Dossop, but I stayed. That's when it happened. In an instant, Papali Honogoso rose out of bed, looking bewildered yet excited. I asked if he felt all right, and he answered, let's see, in his words, I haven't felt this good since yesterday. I thought it was a strange thing to say. Dodd chuckled as he remembered Pap saying the phrase. He had used it often, even while battling through surgeries and illnesses. It was a reminder of how optimistic Pap had been. So it was Pap, said Dodd inquisitively. Yes, Pap was standing there, fully clothed in Papali Honogoso's pajamas. I, of course, thought it was my friend at first, until I noticed his face. And when I looked down at the bed, you can imagine how surprised I was to find Papali Honogoso was lying there, dead, right where he had been before. It was strange and frightening. Upon making that discovery, I inspected Pap and found that he looked similar to my friend, but was clearly a different person. Bamboo fidgeted with the bag until he produced a small painting of a man that resembled Pap. He handed it to Dodd, who looked at it closely, and then couldn't help wondering how anyone could think Papali Honogoso was enough like Pap to believe they were actually the same person. What did you do? Asked Dodd. Pap helped me bury Papali Honogoso. Afterward, he accompanied me here to Twistyard.
I would have felt obligated to tell others of this extraordinary event if Papali Honogoso had had living relatives. However, since his wife had already passed away and his three sons had died childless while fighting Dread Lucius, not to mention Papali Honogoso was himself an only child, I decided not to say anything. "Wow," said Dodd with excitement. "Pap was really transported here somehow. And I guess that would mean I'm..." Dodd's words trailed as he pulled up the right leg of his pants. A rough scar ran 2 inches down his shin from falling out of a giant cottonwood tree when he was 9. "You're 100% you," responded Bamboo, enjoying the wonder on Dodd's face. "After the unusual things Bowler told me at my hut in Lower Janus, I sent 2 young friends to go and search for a dead fisher boy of your general description on the Carsalian seashore, below the cliffs you scaled. They found him and we buried him. I'm still a little surprised that Tritacello didn't notice the differences between you and the other Dodd. But with his busy situation, not to mention your remarkable entry, I can understand how he overlooked it. Perhaps we can keep your rival story a secret. We don't want people thinking you're crazy." "And what of Dodd's family and friends?" said Dodd, feeling guilty about having stolen someone's identity. Dodd was an orphan who roamed the streets penniless. Tritacello found him a short time ago, took him in as a helper of sorts until the boy began to be mentored by a swapper. At that point, Tritacello felt like Dodd had a purpose to perform for the greater good of society. He hired a few men to spend time training him, and then brought him on his first mission to recover a stolen tribe lot for Highgate. That's when you showed up. It appears the swapper died along with the other Dodd, much the same way the swapper died before your grandfather's entry. Bamboo continued to talk while Dodd shifted in his chair and waited for the right moment to break in. "I thought swappers live a long time and aren't susceptible to death, like we are," said Dodd, confused by what Bamboo was suggesting. It went contrary to Buller's lengthy explanations. "Traditionally, that's been the case. A few people, Tads, have the capacity to be aided by swappers throughout their lives and to be chosen at their deaths as swappers. They then are capable of discerning experiences from many relatives, connected in family chains." "Called golden chains," interrupted Dodd. "Yes, and they can pass that information with advice to the right people at the right times, assuming the people are Tads. Many great victories have been won thanks to them. It's a system that has helped good prevail over evil for tens of thousands of years. Though recently, swappers have been targeted and destroyed by a technology that most people couldn't possibly know exists. I'm still not sure who has it and how they got it. It's disturbing and perplexing." Dodd put his hand on Bamboo's shoulder. The old man was getting tears in his eyes and was obviously distressed by what he knew. "I haven't told anyone, and the Maj are the only people I know of that had such a powerful technology. Regardless, dark forces are triumphing in the destruction of the whole system. There used to be many golden chains. Now there are only a few. And the swappers are young, younger than me. The oldest one I've heard of in years is only 280. I remember the days when they were all over 1,000 years old. It seems today that the experiences they can draw from are so recent, they're limited and shallow. It's devastating." Dodd wasn't sure how to respond. Bamboo was crying, and he held in his eyes so much more than he was saying. "Promise me you'll seek out the full truth and the secrets after I'm dead. Since Hopas was overheard by Boot, the new code word is Dossum. Remember to follow through and ask. Also, get Higgis half of the map first, and then ask Dilly for hers. Neither of them knows who will come, so don't be surprised if Dilly gives you a hard time about it. I'm sure she'll be expecting someone more like Commendus." "Can't you tell me the secrets now?" pleaded Dodd eagerly. "That would save me searching. Not to mention, I'm sure I'll have plenty of questions. If you trust me with the information, I'll help you figure out what to do. Besides, I'm dying to know what they're about." Bamboo shook his head. "I have promises to keep, and among them, I promise to restrict the secrets in this way, despite everything that is happening now." Bamboo looked straight into Dodd's eyes and added, "If anything should happen to me, obtain them quickly, if you know what I mean." It was as if he were telling him something he couldn't exactly say. "Of course," said Dodd. He really had no idea, but he knew the look in Bamboo's eyes would stay in his mind for a long time. "I'm sure you must have many questions about how your circumstance works," said Bamboo, wiping away the tears and straining to smile at Dodd. "It would probably be best to let Pap answer them." "He's alive?" gasped Dodd, his eyes full of hope. "I'm sorry, no," said Bamboo, flushing with embarrassment. "He was poisoned at Highgate.
I arrived when he was already unconscious, on death's door. He faded soon after, and with his passing, his body disappeared. Only his clothes and those three keys remained. After that, I told everyone his family had picked him up from Highgate. Bombu patted Dodd on the knee and added sadly, "I assume he made it back home to Earth for a traditional burial?" "Yes," said Dodd somberly, remembering Pap's funeral. "I meant his books when I suggested he could explain the situation to you. Your grandpa took great care in recording his thoughts and discoveries, not to mention he inherited a fabulous collection of diaries from..." Bombu hesitated momentarily before continuing, with a glint in his eye. "The diaries are from someone very special, someone you and Pap have got a lot in common with. But I'll let you read about him for yourself." Pap kept them in his office, down the hall, up above his desk. Bombu pointed with his finger toward a darkened corridor. "Oh, and I have Pap's first volume in my care," added Bombu. "I was trying to think of what I needed to tell you, and I figured his writings would jog my memory." Bombu grabbed his cane and struggled to stand. Dodd quickly hopped up and helped him to his feet. "Anything else?" asked Dodd, wishing Bombu would stick around and share more. "Yes," said Bombu, "now I remember something else your grandfather touched upon. Your time here and at home is a lot like licking two lollipops, one in each hand. When you leave home, it waits for you. When you leave green, it also waits, so long as you continue to wear your medallion." "The medallion, Pap's good luck charm, of course! That's how I'm here," said Dodd excitedly. It was like a light bulb had been turned on in his mind. "Now I know why my grandpa had such a fit with an old lady at the library. She told him that time waits for no man. I guess she was wrong, because it did wait for him." "And it waits for you," said Bombu. He patted Dodd on the head. "While you're here, you won't age much. But be careful, you could be injured or killed, and it would stay with you. Your grandfather did gain quite a few scars while he was here, especially when he was seriously wounded 6 years ago in a fight with the Dread. Pap bested him with his sword before quickly retreating home to get fixed at a real hospital. And when he came back, he was 2 days too late to finish the job. I guess someone had taken his medallion off or something." Dodd stared in amazement. It all fit together perfectly. He remembered sitting with his mother at his grandfather's side while Pap lay recovering. Pap had been reportedly injured in the torso with lacerations from a driving lawnmower, but Cole hadn't believed it. In the end, when Pap had regained consciousness, he had been very disturbed that someone had taken off his good luck charm. Apparently, the nurse had followed hospital policy that required all jewelry be removed before surgery. "It's starting to make sense," said Dodd. He followed Bombu in the direction of the entrance after helping him trim the lights off. "You'll have to come back tomorrow," said Bombu. "Take a look around in the bright light of day, and don't forget to flip through those books. However, Dodd, please keep the information secret. I'm certain Pap wrote down enough about his adventures to overly enlighten darker minds, let alone the other collection. Too much truth in the hands of a liar is more dangerous than a world of lies told to the truthful. When people like the Dread are mostly honest, they're more deadly." "Is that what made Doss dangerous? He knew so much as a swapper?" asked Dodd innocently. "Doss wasn't a swapper, and he wasn't aided by one either, regardless of what people say. A swapper couldn't do what he did. The role of a swapper is to give advice, not take control. Ultimately, the destiny of each individual lies within his own agency, and Doss was no exception. He was powerful and evil, and yes, he was very unique, but more like you than a swapper. Besides, we don't need to worry about him anymore, or hopefully the likes of him forever." Bombu slammed the door, making sure it was tight. Dodd reached down to secure it with his key and was greeted by Bombu's hand. "The door always locks automatically," he said. "You need the key to get in, not out." Bombu led the way down the hall toward the narrow shaft. "Here comes the fun part," said Dodd naively. "Oh, I prefer the ride up," replied Bombu. He was trying to prepare Dodd for what was coming. "Why don't you like the ride down?" asked Dodd, becoming nervous. "Probably because I'm too old to do it with a candle in one hand, like Pap used to." Bombu walked past the wooden box to a ledge. He took a harness from the wall and started fidgeting with a rope and metal contraption. "Aren't we riding down?" asked Dodd apprehensively. "No, son. I'm sure your grandfather could have rigged it that way, but he always liked the feeling of a quicker drop, so he didn't." Bombu noticed Dodd's concerned look and added, "If you're afraid, you can wait in the box and I'll pull you down once I reach the bottom." It was a tempting offer, yet there was more than physical health to think of, like Pap's reputation. After all, Dodd was his grandson.
"I'm coming. It looks fun," responded Dodd hesitantly, following a few moments of contemplation. He rigged up and they both prepared to drop.
"Are you ready to go?" asked Bamboo.
"Looking forward to it," said Dodd in a faked happy voice. He was still trying to convince himself that it wasn't so bad.
"Good."
Bamboo dropped his Sherlite candle. It fell the full distance and remained burning once it hit the stone floor. Dodd was terrified. The task had seemed more manageable when darkness had hidden the bottom. Now, the little speck of light appeared to be the size of an ant, or smaller, revealing how high up he was. It made Dodd tremble and wonder how he had been able to draw the box down in the first place. Side by side, Dodd and Bamboo descended. It wasn't as hard as Dodd had thought, and despite the fact that he had to do it in complete blackness, the rope was secure and close enough to Bamboo's that he jostled into him occasionally, making the venture less horrifying, and the gloves Pap had left at the top did a good job of minimizing the burn.
"I once tried this with white slips," said Bamboo in passing. "It shredded them and left me with a nasty rope burn. These gloves are much nicer. They're perfect for gliding along, aren't they?"
Dot agreed in mumbled tones. Once they reached the floor, Bamboo picked up his light and made his way to the door as if nothing had happened. Dot, on the other hand, wanted to do a celebration dance. He had never scaled down a massive cliff, or at least he couldn't remember doing so, though it quickly brought a question to his mind that he knew he needed to ask. "If I'm all me and not the other Dodd, then when was I injured? I don't remember getting hurt while climbing, and Tritacella was right behind me."
"You phase in slowly the first time, or at least that's how it was with Pap. He hobbled around like he was sleepwalking, muttering all kinds of strange things for about 10 minutes before becoming fully aware of the situation. Of course, later he was proficient enough to zip back and forth without any confusion. If I had a guess, I would say that the same person who killed the orphan Dodd must have wounded you before you were conscious enough to know. It's surprising you survived."
"I was shot while sleep climbing," muttered Dodd.
"I suppose. After all, you don't seem to remember getting hit or stabbed. And it did sound like you were disoriented on the cliff. At least that's the version Dungo rudely insisted. He doesn't have any manners, does he?"
"In his defense," said Dodd, "if I was sleep climbing, I'm sure I didn't help the ones below me much. It probably was my fault poor Bowler landed in a glanter worm pit."
Bamboo reached down and turned the door handle. "This one doesn't need locking either. Just remember to shut it firmly. We wouldn't want anyone wandering in."
Bamboo gave Dodd a look. It was as though he had also said, "Don't be inviting Boot and Buck to join you in playing around in there. Someone will get hurt."
Dodd nodded in agreement, and they made their way toward Green Hall. Dodd felt like he was finally waking up. The pieces of the puzzle fit together perfectly. Many things Pap had said in the past were now logical, and the cuts and scrapes Pap had always displayed fit, having come from battles rather than the stories he had told of fishing precariously or mowing recklessly. It was empowering to at last know the truth. Below the swords, Bamboo patted Dodd on the head and reassured him that he was glad to have him around. As he turned to walk away, Dodd had one last question. "How exactly do I get home? Not that I want to go right now or anything like that, just in case I want to visit."
Dodd sounded embarrassed. He felt like an ungrateful child asking to leave a special party early because it wasn't good enough.
Bamboo put one hand in the air and said, "I really don't know for sure. It seems Pap would concentrate on something and then zip, but you should read his writings. He wrote all about it."
Dodd said thank you and good night while heading into Green Hall. However, his mind was already halfway back to Pap's house. He couldn't stand the thought of waiting until morning, and to make matters worse, everyone was getting ready to sleep, a thing he had already done plenty of that day. A few rooms along the hall had trimmed their lights off, and snoring noises could be heard. Dodd looked back at the open doors and noticed Boot's bag lying in the corner near the entrance. It contained Buster candles. In a flash, before anyone had a chance to detect his return, Dodd grabbed the bag and ran. In the distance down the hall, he could see Bamboo walking slowly to his quarters. Dodd crossed the corridor and slipped into the conference room. The space felt more than just vacant. Chills rolled down his spine until his knees bumped against each other. He broke out a Buster candle and struck the wall the way he had seen others ignite them. It filled the room with plenty of smokeless light, more than the candle Bamboo had used. But still, the uneasiness didn't go away.
"Perhaps I should wait until morning to return to Pap's bunk," said Dodd to himself. His voice echoed a little in the room. Then again, If I go now, I could read the books half the night, catch a quick nap, and be ready to meet the day head-on tomorrow. Not to mention, I need to think of what others might conclude. Spending my time alone would draw suspicion. Dodd mumbled as he inched his way toward the curtain. I'll do it, he said forcefully. After all, it was Pap's house, and now it's mine. The door creaked when Dodd opened it with his key. Inside the small space, Dodd hastily searched for the right rope. Swoosh, swoosh, swoosh! The cord squeaked and whistled as he drew the basket down. This time, Dodd noticed that a giant counterweight rose as the box came down. That's how he does it, said Dodd. He spoke to himself to calm his nerves, though it wasn't working. Something was off. Once in the basket, Dodd felt like a magician. He pulled the string, and presto, he shot upward. It was exhilarating. Having already done it before prepared him so that the ride was more enjoyable and less nauseating. At the top, he noticed one rigging hung alone. Next time I'll bring up the rest from the bottom, said Dodd, remembering that he had seen a pile of 7 or 8. He stopped to make a mental note. It would be dreadfully difficult climbing down without one, unless Pap had a spare in his house. At Pap's front door, something in Dodd's head made him pause. He put the key to the lock 6 times before he conjured enough courage to turn it. When he finally pushed the door open, blackness was instantly replaced by light. He had intended on putting fire to the big stacks, yet there was enough light from his one buster candle that he momentarily forgot. Let's see, he quietly spoke to himself. I wonder what that is. Dodd walked over and worked at a jammed drawer until it opened, releasing the object that had been partially visible before. The drawer held all sorts of miscellaneous gadgets. He took the remaining buster candles out of Boots' bag and began to refill it with the most interesting things. Wow, that looks neat, whispered Dodd, climbing on the back of a chair to reach something that was sequestered at the rear of a cluttered shelf. The contraption appeared to be made of 5 red golf balls that were directly attached to separate thin black cords, which joined together into the head of a 25-foot rope. Maybe it's a lasso, said Dodd. He put it in the bag and went on muttering as he looked at everything. It didn't take long before Boots' bag began to droop from its heavy load. Dodd was still contemplating spending the night at Pap's place, but he hadn't gotten comfortable with the feeling in the house, so he filled the bag just in case he chickened out. At least he would be able to examine the stuff in the dormitory while Boot and Buck slept close by. Dodd had only searched half the devices stowed in the entry room, yet he had already overfilled Boots' bag. The weight caused his right shoulder to sag, and consequently, when he walked, he rocked back and forth. His distorted reflection in the glass on the outside wall of the parlor, over by the hall entrance, took his breath away. It was scary. It's only me, sighed Dodd, attempting to regain his composure. The blurred image of what appeared to be a hunching beast with a bag was enough to incite Dodd's already tense senses. Though little did he know, he was in for real trouble.